This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Anticipating violence. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Monday, August 31st. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Authorities in Oregon say the nightly protests in Portland could see a bump in violence following a fatal shooting after a weekend demonstration.
Residents in parts of hard-hit Louisiana could be without power for a month due to the destruction caused by Hurricane Laura.
Firefighters in California say they continue to gain ground against nearly two dozen wildfires helped by cooler temperatures.
And on the campaign trail, Joe Biden and Democrats rethinking the response to riots.
Or the approval, I guess you could say, of Black Lives Matter has dropped dramatically in the past 2 months. So in June, it had a 61% approval to 36% disapproval. And then just, you know, this August, the poll showed 48% both approve and disapprove.
Alex Swoyer at the Washington Times says Democrats are re-strategizing as President Trump gets a boost from his law and order message. Officials in Portland, Oregon, say they're anticipating an increase in violence at regular protests in the city. They point to social media posts vowing revenge for a fatal shooting over the weekend during clashes between supporters of President Trump and counter-demonstrators. OregonLive.com says a 48-year-old man who's a self-described Antifa supporter is under investigation in the fatal shooting Saturday night of a demonstrator after a pro-Trump rally. Aaron Danielson, supporter of the conservative group Patriot Prayer, was shot in the chest and died in the street. President Trump has been critical on Twitter of Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler, who pushed back during a news conference yesterday.
I'm going to do the work that I need to do here in my local community with my local officials to take accountability for what's happening on our streets. And I'd appreciate that either the president support us or he stay the hell out of the way.
Meanwhile, a group of leaders representing various progressive organizations and civil rights groups from Portland have called for the resignation of Mr. Wheeler for what they call his lack of leadership. Utility officials in parts of hard-hit Louisiana say power outages caused by Hurricane Laura could last a month. More than 350,000 Louisiana residents remained without electricity yesterday, while 87 water systems serving upwards of 150,000 people remained inoperable. Entergy, the largest electric provider, says it has about 13,000 personnel from 29 states with boots on the ground in Louisiana, but more than 170 major transmission towers were wiped out by the hurricane. Governor John Bel Edwards.
Right now, we have 8,962 individuals in non-congregant shelters in the state of Louisiana. And basically, these are 45 hotels across the state, 29 of which are in New Orleans.
Elsewhere, Beauregard Electric Cooperative told its members in a Facebook post it will be at least 4 weeks before their power is restored, possibly longer depending on the extent of damage. Meanwhile, the state's hurricane death toll rose by 2 yesterday to 14. Also, cleanup efforts have been hampered by the power outages. A number of states in the Midwest are reporting increasing coronavirus infections. More now from this morning's Mike Gavin.
According to numbers from Reuters, Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota have recently reported record one-day increases in new cases, while Montana and Idaho are seeing record numbers of hospitalized COVID patients. Nationally, hospitalizations and the positivity rates of tests are all declining, but there are hotspots. Many of the new cases in Iowa are in the counties that are home to University of Iowa and Iowa State University, which are holding some in-person classes. Infections have also risen after an annual motorcycle rally in Sturgis, South Dakota. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo yesterday, by the way, said he was sending a SWAT team to a State University of New York campus in Oneonta in upstate New York to contain a COVID-19 outbreak. Fall classes were suspended for 2 weeks after more than 100 people tested positive. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. Top Democrats are scrambling to adopt a tougher approach to riots that have broken out in cities across the country, casting a worried eye at President Trump's rising poll numbers, which experts said were driven at least partly by his law and order message. It's a story by Alex Swoyer, reporter at The Washington Times. Alex, what are you hearing?
The support for the approval, I guess you could say, of Black Lives Matter has dropped dramatically in the past 2 months. So in June, it had a 61% approval to 36% disapproval. And then this August, the poll showed 48% both approve and disapprove. So that's like about a 25-point shift, right? So I think you're seeing polls tighten because that message of law and order that the president is touting, you've heard all throughout the RNC this week, it's really resonating with voters, especially in those swing states.
Okay, and the defunding issue that some progressives have adopted as well.
Yeah, and that doesn't, it's not polling well either. No, of course not. And so, you know, I think that you're also, I go to the, I don't know if you've done a lot of coverage of it, but Kim Klasick, the congressional candidate in Baltimore area, how she had that viral ad and went around and talked to voters in that area and asked about defunding the police. And, you know, her ad shows no, like, why would you do that? And that seems to be what people are saying to, you know, pollsters also in these critical swing states in the Rust Belt. And I talked to one pollster who said, you know, I think he's surveyed at least four battleground states so far on this issue. And he's talked about how just collectively that he's found that voters believe the BLM movement has made race relations worse instead of better by at least like a margin exceeding 10%. So you're really seeing people be turned off by, that narrative about peaceful protesting. They're not necessarily buying it from the Democrats.
Well, we're speaking with Alex Swoyer, reporter at The Washington Times. Her piece is called Biden and Dems Rethink Riots Response as Law and Order Message Lifts Trump. However, it was also pointed out in your story that crime is not necessarily a motivating factor for voters. Explain that.
Well, that's one of the when I was talking to different pollsters, you know, they all have their own opinions about what to look at and what can be for what can foreshadow November. And one of the political science professors I spoke with said that crime hasn't necessarily been a top five issue for voters. Right. And you saw kind of race relations spike up there to the top in June, following right after the Memorial Day weekend killing of George Floyd and when that went viral. But since then, it's kind of things have leveled out and we're returning to your traditional economy being the number one issue, COVID, you know, healthcare, that sort of thing.
Did I understand from your story, too, that despite criticism of the way President Trump has managed the coronavirus pandemic, it may now be helping him in some way.
Yeah. So one of the pollsters I spoke to, he was saying, it depends what pollster you speak to and what they think that the numbers suggest. So some are saying, oh, well, with only a 38% of respondents saying that the president has handled COVID well, that hurts him. While others look at some of the other crosstabs, like where people are on school issue, right? Sending kids back to school. And a pollster said he thinks that's actually helping the president because he said north of 65% of the swing state voters are saying, you know, no, it's safe to send kids back to school. They're ready to start getting things back to normal. He actually told me he asks people how they're handling the pandemic and, you know, gives them different answer choices. Like, are you waiting for a vaccine? Are you doing just, you know, your standard errands or, and, you know, are you returning to normal? And he said the answer that's rising like a rocket right now is people saying that they're, you know, not going to live in fear.
So circle back then to what the headline has suggested here. What might the new messaging be from Mr. Biden and Democrats?
Well, I think we're seeing it. You know, we saw Joe Biden take to Twitter, I guess, to condemn the violence and say, you know, peaceful protests are fine, but the needless violence must end. And obviously, you know, the day before it was CNN's Don Lemon who was saying this whole violence thing is hurting Democrats in the polls. They need to come out and condemn it. And then, you know, 24 hours later, that's what happened. And I think we're going to continue to see a little bit more of a split and an emphasis on that from Democrats going forward, saying, you know, peaceful protests we support, but they're going to start going after the whole crime issue that we're seeing in places like Wisconsin, Portland. Even the Portland mayor has come out and said, you know, acknowledge that what's going on there is just fueling the Trump campaign and providing the president, you know, video for his ads.
Thanks, Alex. Alex Swoyer, reporter at The Washington Times. Meanwhile, Mr. Biden released a statement yesterday condemning the violence in Portland, calling it unacceptable. The nightly protests in Portland have been going on for 3 months. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Portland police are gathering video of a fatal shooting Saturday night after racial justice protesters clashed with Trump supporters in a caravan hundreds of vehicles long. Denouncing Black Lives Matter protesters as agitators and thugs, President Trump called for a federal crackdown on demonstrations in cities like Washington, D.C. and Portland in a series of angry tweets calling Portland's Mayor Ted Wheeler incompetent and a fool, Trump's words. Wheeler fired back.
Do you seriously wonder, Mr. President, why this is the first time in decades that America has seen this level of violence? It's you who have created the hate and the division.
Number two.
In a statement, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden called the Portland protest violence unacceptable and challenged President Trump to stop, quote, recklessly encouraging it.
Number three.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron said on CBS's Face the Nation he'll meet with FBI agents this week for a painstaking review of new information in the ballistics report on the fatal police shooting of Breonna Taylor in Louisville in March.
That is a critical piece of this investigation. It's not the end-all be-all. There are still some witness testimony and interviews that have to be conducted, but we do have that ballistics report.
The death is being investigated by both the state authorities and the FBI. Huge crowds of protesters flooded Belarus's capital again on Sunday, calling for President Alexander Lukashenko to step down, met by hundreds of riot police and armored vehicles attempting to block them from reaching Minsk's main independent square. The forces did not move to violently disperse the crowds and protesters peacefully left by mid-evening. Belarus's interior ministry says it arrested at least 140 people. President Trump's intelligence chief on Fox News Sunday defended his decision to cease in-person congressional briefings on election security.
They heard me make a couple of promises. One of them was to always follow the law. The other was that I would do everything I could to protect the unauthorized disclosure of classified information, allowing people to leak it for political purposes.
Democrats say the move would suppress critical information about foreign election meddling and may subpoena. United Airlines is dropping its despised $200 change fees on tickets for U.S. travel, effective immediately to encourage more bookings. It's making the policy permanent for all standard economy and premium cabin tickets, and it applies to any ticket already booked through the end of the year.
Wow. I got that email from United Airlines about 4 o'clock this morning, and it says for good.
Could you believe your eyes?
For good.
Uh-huh.
Wow. We'll see how long for good is. Thanks, Rasa. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Our newfound love for sweatpants has apparel retailers racing to get casual as they try to kickstart sales decimated by coronavirus-related store closures. It's a story by Micah Maidenberg, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Micah, what's trending?
The simple fact is that a lot of the clothing chains and a lot of the retailers that focus on apparel are just kind of racing to figure out how to keep up with the more dressed down, relaxed, casual, call it what you will, sort of trend in daily dress. People are working from home and they are not donning those suits, those dress shirts and the ties.
Mm. All right. So I know you talked or heard from a handful of specific retailers, like who, who's saying what?
Yeah. So Gap was one yesterday afternoon. So Gap, you know, of course people know the Gap stores themselves, but Gap also owns Old Navy, Banana Republic and Athleta. Athleta is one of their smaller businesses, but it's growing faster. And Athleta sells tights, jogging pants, sweatpants, activewear. And they, interestingly, they Athleta performed the best for Gap in the company's latest quarter, you know, with sales up about 6%, a lot of online ordering. And you can just sort of contrast that with Banana Republic, which is known for workwear and sort of dressier dressier clothing. Sales at Banana were off 52% year over year. Abercrombie and Finch was another one that reported results Thursday, and their CEO said, you know, that they had saw consumers sort of shift into, you know, just sort of softer and cozier merchandise. The quote, one of my favorite quotes in this story, though, came from the top executive at Kate Spade, the Kate Spade brand. She said, we sold pajamas like crazy. And that, in talking about their the latest quarter for the owner of the Kate Spade kind of brand.
We're speaking with Micah Maidenberg, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Clothing Retailers Go Casual as Consumers Spurn Dressy Clothes. What about the likes of Walmart or Target?
Well, interestingly, like probably a lot of Gordon, a lot of your listeners know that Walmart and Target had, you know, very strong quarters, you know, covering much of the summer. Both of those retailers stayed open throughout the pandemic as sort of essential businesses. And both Walmart and Target said that shoppers kind of in the most, you know, over the summer, their summer quarter, basically, were spending more on clothing, on apparel. They probably were helped by the closure of big box store, or excuse me, weaker kind of chains like JCPenney and J. Crew. So we have seen some like bounce back in apparel spending at the big box chains.
Thanks, Micah. Micah Maidenberg, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Now more than ever, where you get your news matters. Start your day with the facts. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us, and welcome into Monday, August 31st. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Portland expects a spike in violence in nightly demonstrations after a fatal shooting at a weekend protest. Five people shot, including one fatally, outside a restaurant in Chicago. Damage from Hurricane Laura could leave thousands of Louisiana residents without electricity for a month. Cooler temps helped California firefighters over the weekend, but the mercury is rising again. Baseball's trade deadline is today, and how Girl Scouts in Colorado are making their schools safer. That story in about 20 minutes. The temperature checks are becoming the new normal as schools, businesses, and offices attempt to reopen safely while in the midst of a pandemic. But as the CDC estimated last month that nearly 40% of COVID-19 patients are asymptomatic. Is this cumbersome practice really keeping anyone safe from the coronavirus? Adriana Rodriguez, health reporter at USA Today, has been asking experts. Adriana, what have you found?
So what I had found basically talking to experts is that these temperature checks can be flawed, right? And they're flawed for a couple of reasons. One is because of the devices themselves. So most of these devices are non-contact, so that someone is able to take your temperature at a safe distance without having to touch that person. But because they're non-contact, that means they're really only measuring the surface temperature. So when you're outside, let's say, waiting to get your temperature checked, it's still basically summer, you're in 90-degree weather and under the hot sun, then when it's your turn to get your temperature checked, the device could read that you have a fever, even though you don't, you're just hot, right? So then the second flaw doesn't really have to do with devices, but just having a fever itself. We know that not everyone who has COVID-19 has a fever. So experts actually suspect that up to 40% of people infected with the coronavirus are asymptomatic, meaning they don't show any symptoms. Mm. And then other studies have found, specifically in children, that only half of these symptomatic patients exhibit a fever. So if you rely solely on these temperature checks, you're definitely going to be missing people who could have the virus and be infectious.
Jeez. So has anybody gone so far as to say taking people's temperatures then in this manner is a waste of time?
Waste of time, I don't think so. I mean, Dr. Anthony Fauci himself did say that they had sort of foregone the temperature checks at the White House and at the National Institutes of Health. They had sort of abandoned the temperature checks because he said that they're quote unquote notoriously inaccurate and that it just saves time to just ask people questions. But then you have to really rely on the honesty system, right?
Yeah.
So most people say, yes, do some temperature checks, but don't rely solely on them. We need to use them as part of another tool in our toolbox instead of the end-all, be-all determination of illness.
Hmm. We're speaking with Adriana Rodriguez, health reporter at USA Today. Her piece is called Temperature Checks. They're inaccurate, and not everyone with COVID has a fever, so why are we still doing them? So when we return to work, or when folks start showing up back at the offices then, are we going to have to do, say, a number of tests to make people feel good, like a temperature check, the questions? I don't know, maybe one of these rapid tests is part of that?
Yeah, I actually am doing another story on daycares, and a lot of daycares are going with that route in terms of like an all-encompassing screening. So you would do the temperature checks, but then you would also ask the child or the parent, you know, if they have any other symptoms, if they have a cough or a shortness of breath or even a runny nose. And then we should also be asking about a person's household, you know, are they living with anyone who has COVID-19 or is anybody suspected of being sick? But then on top of those screening questions, we have to make sure that we also impose those preventative measures once we're actually inside the building. So, you know, wear a mask, social distance, wash your hands, you know, basically all of those things we're sick of hearing about, but for some reason can't quite perfect still.
It does seem like you'll have to commit some sort of time and energy and effort and obviously dollars if you're going to do this properly or with some sort of effectiveness, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's still going to be flawed, too. You know, a lot of people say, especially a lot of educators and child care centers say to parents and pediatricians, you know, be flexible because all these policies will change. You know, there is going to be somebody who comes in, maybe that's asymptomatic and we don't catch them. And maybe there is going to be a positive case. And so in that case, you know, we're going to modify these policies and we're going to modify these screenings in order to accommodate that with what we know and what we learn in the future.
The stats in some cases were pretty startling, right? What was the one number, you know, 50%? By the time we might catch this, that's about it, despite efforts we're making?
50% what? I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
50% of the time we might actually catch a positive case based on the methods we're trying?
Oh, right, yeah. And that's based on a study of children specifically, is that the fact that, you know, they say that a lot of people are not asymptomatic, but with children specifically, about the people who were symptomatic in that study of children, only 50% had a fever. So other people, other children had like runny nose or like headache or something like that. So even if you are symptomatic, which a lot of people are asymptomatic, a fever isn't the predominant symptom.
Adriana Rodriguez, health reporter at USA Today. 20 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning,
America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that grandmothers can be prone to saving things, sometimes strange things. Even with that knowledge, this still qualifies as more than a little weird. A TikTok user recently shared video of her grandmother showing off a McDonald's hamburger and French fries that have been sitting inside a closet since 1996. And while the food doesn't exactly look fresh, it also doesn't look like it's over 20 years old. The grandmother starts off by showing off the bag's advertisement for a NASCAR race in 1996. She then takes out the fries, which she says look like they could have fallen into a seat a month or so ago, and says they never rotted or decayed. She then pulls out the burger. All that's left in the bag is the bun and burger, neither of which appear to be rotted or decayed. The video has been viewed over 3 million times. And if the story sounds familiar, you might remember we told you earlier this year about the Utah man who made headlines when he showed off another 20-year-old burger that still looked surprisingly good for its age.
Wow.
Now, she never said in the video, Grandma never said why she saved the burger and fries. And, you know, why, and it was in a nice box, too, like sort of a nice cardboard box tucked away in her closet. And she was super proud to pull it out and show off how it had never never rotted or decayed.
Or,
but again, didn't say why.
Or was found by ants.
Right. Wasn't found
none
by ants.
Either,
no,
huh?
No bugs, no nothing. That would be what I'd be afraid
strange.
Of is, you know, bugs sniffing that out and attacking it. So I don't understand why that was the case.
And why 24 years later?
Right.
Why not just round quarter of a century next year?
Well, I mean, it seems like she takes it out a lot. Like she's sort of very adept at showing it off. You know, she points out that the NASCAR race printed on the labels from 1996. And, you know, she seemed extremely proud of the fact that she had this burger and to show it off to her granddaughter.
It's a display case.
Right. Yes.
Well, speaking of food items, by the way,
uh-huh.
I was talking to my mom last night.
Yes.
Who has found this incredible mix of new sandwich for breakfast. You ready?
Okay.
Sun-dried tomato bagel.
All right.
With egg, turkey sausage, provolone cheese, and here's the kicker, drizzled with syrup.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so sort of like, I think, the McGriddle, right?
Yes.
Isn't that what McDonald's does, basically?
Right. That sounds McDonald's-esque.
But this...
Right.
On a sun-dried tomato bagel.
Sun-dried tomato bagel and the provolone. See, that's
right.
What I thought was the kicker.
Yeah,
but you went even a step further with the syrup. So,
right.
All right.
Mom's onto something there. I got to try this as soon as possible.
Taste test later today. And we know that things can be kind of tight in a studio apartment, so it's natural that you'd want to do everything you can to maximize your square footage. A real estate listing from the UK caught the attention of social media users, but probably not the way the owner had hoped. In one of the photos for the second floor apartment for sale, the bed is pictured balanced precariously over the railing and over the stairwell. Not only that, it appears that some shelves were added to the wall on one side of the mattress, while another shelving unit is seen hanging from the ceiling on the other side. There's also a stepladder placed by the foot of the bed to help you hoist yourself up for a relaxing night of sleep dangling over the stairwell. Twitter users had things to say, including, "How is that bed legal? You roll over and you die." Others were more worried about their technology than their bodies, worried that their phone could fall out of the bed and tumble all the way down the stairs.
Of course.
I mean, no guardrails or anything. Man. I have to say, I would not trust myself to be on a bed like that hanging over the stairway.
Sounds like a couple of suspect lofts I had in off-campus college apartments.
Yes.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt, and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for being with us. With all the increased time at home, it's no surprise 55% of us say cooking during COVID-19 has left us feeling fatigued. A new study of 2,000 Americans has found that due to restrictions when dining out, people are eating at home more often than ever and are cooking an average
of 9 meals a week. But Americans may be looking for more variety in what they cook and eat. As results revealed, the average respondent has cooked the same meal 28 times since the start of COVID-19. The survey, conducted by OnePoll on behalf of Sunbasket, asked respondents about their relationship with cooking and healthy eating as it pertains to the ongoing pandemic. Many enjoy cooking, but sometimes wish it was just less time-consuming. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Trump is calling for a federal crackdown on racial justice demonstrations in cities like Washington, D.C. and Portland, Oregon, where a man died after tensions between pro-Trump and anti-racism groups exploded Saturday night. Trump unleashed a Twitter storm of rage against Black Lives Matter protesters and Democratic leaders as he prepares to travel to Kenosha, Wisconsin tomorrow, where a black man was left paralyzed a week ago after a police officer shot him 7 times in the back. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes would rather Trump stayed away.
You look at the incendiary remarks that the president has made, they centered an entire convention around creating more animosity and creating more division around what's going on in Kenosha.
Number two.
Governor John Bel Edwards is warning residents weeding through post-Hurricane Laura wreckage along the Louisiana coast that they face weeks without power or water in hot, stifling late summer conditions.
That is a big number of outages. It's going to be a long and difficult process to restore power. I know they're going to work just as quickly as they possibly can.
The U.S. toll from the Category 4 hurricane stands at 14 deaths, more than half of those killed by carbon monoxide poisoning from the unsafe operation of generators.
Number three.
U.S. cases of the novel coronavirus surpassed 6 million Sunday, more than 47,000 new cases reported and almost 1,000 additional deaths. The head of the Food and Drug Administration says the agency is willing to fast-track a COVID-19 vaccine before critical Phase 3 clinical trials are complete, as long as officials are convinced the benefits outweigh the risks. Dr. Stephen Hahn maintains the decision would not be driven by politics, but science. Colleges still trying to corral their campuses. The University of Michigan moving ahead with in-person instruction after delaying the start of classes for 2 weeks. Students in a Baylor University dorm confined to their own floors for 4 days, while the university carries out testing and contact tracing of new cases. Purdue, Syracuse, both suspended students who've been caught partying, and UConn's evicted them. The MTV Video Music Awards ceremony was dedicated to Chadwick Boseman, and ABC aired Black Panther commercial-free last night as a primetime tribute to its star, who died of colon cancer Friday at age 43. The film was followed by a special celebrating the actor's life and explaining the medical condition that took it too soon.
That was a shocker on Friday night, for sure, when that bulletin came across. Thank you, Ross Ledger, with us. When the pandemic hit, the 15 young women from Girl Scout Troop 65430 in Highland Ranch, Colorado, didn't know how to make personal protective equipment that would keep teachers and students safe, but that didn't stop them. 10-year-old Emma Bangertner told Yahoo Life they wanted a safer environment at Wildcat Mountain Elementary School. So the scouts watched videos they found online that taught them how to construct the necessary PPE, like plastic partitions, but first they had to fund their endeavor. That's when they realized they could use some of the money they'd raised this past winter from sales of cookies to buy the materials to make PPE. The PPE, by the way, has already been put to use in the school. The troop's work even scored the coveted Girl Scout Bronze Award, known as the highest award for Girl Scouts in the 4th or 5th grade. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.